it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape. Definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in. And recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis, when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip, but he really could have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change. Rearrange the game, so now we gotta change lanes. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
Pancakes and Power Slam Show. Crave Wrestling presents Tuesday night once again. We are here live and in living color, as the American Dweem Dusty Rhodes would say. Ladies and gentlemen, I have to unfortunately make an announcement. I had major surgery this weekend, and it was definitely unplanned, unexpected, but I am here to show my support for all the Crave Wrestling fans, and just to let you all know that even on Christmas Eve, even with major surgery, I'm here to let you all know that I am here to let the Crave Wrestling fans know that I'm here to support you all, and I thank you all so much for continuing to support Crave Wrestling. 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. Again, 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. We just continue to have fun. Chat room, log in live, tweet at Crave Wrestling, and let's continue to have some fun with Raw Christmas. First question of the day, first trivia question of tonight is, who were known as the Mega Bucks? Who were known as the Mega Bucks? I accept all your well wishes. Of course, you can follow at Crave Wrestling, but I accept your well wishes through Twitter at Chris Prolific. It's my personal Twitter handle, so follow me there. I definitely welcome your well wishes in this road to recovery. So, but I definitely at least want to come on tonight and let you know that I'm still here. We are still continuing to have some fun through Crave Wrestling, through Pancakes and Power Slams. We are devoted to the wrestling audience. We are devoted to the Crave Wrestling audience. And tonight shows how much I am thankful and grateful, as I am supposed to be resting, but we are live here in the Pancakes and Power Slam studio, and we're going to have some fun. Raw Christmas started off with the Authority in-ring promo. Randy Orton appears, gives himself a Christmas present. He gives himself as a Christmas present, and he gets the night off. Natalya, the Funkadactyls, and the Bella Twins defeats Eva Marie. Defeats Summer Rae, Tamina Snuka, Vicky Guerrero, Oksana, Caitlin, and Alicia Fox. Seems like we're going to continue to have this Total Divas versus non-Total Divas mumbo jumbo, which, I mean, I really don't know the point of it. There's not much build to it. The Total Divas is no longer on the air for now until next season, which will happen next year. So really don't understand the point of continue to have these type of matches, these type of feuds. I definitely don't understand this at all. So not a fan of it. We need to see some type of build. It looks like they're going to try to build Brie Bella again. I hope not. I hope that doesn't happen. And I really hope that Natalya still get another opportunity to shine. And just having her have a decent build just for the sake of having her lose at TLC, I really, really hope that they just don't put Natalya underneath the further down on the totem pole again. That definitely would not be a good idea. So, Brie Bella, looks like they're trying to use her again like they did with SummerSlam, but I'm not a big fan of it. They need someone else to been there. Even if it's not Natalya, why not Naomi? Why not someone like that? Naomi's she's over. She's popular with the fans. She's very athletic, and she will just continue to improve. And I've said it many times here on the show that Cameron will continue to improve as well throughout the weeks, and I think that she is doing a great job doing that weekly, every week. So you can tell that she wants it. She definitely wants it. She definitely has that passion to get better, as opposed to her tough enough days. And I think that she will just continue to be better. So I'm not sold on anyone right now, honestly, except for Natalya and maybe Naomi. But we'll see in the coming weeks if someone else will be the person for AJ Lee. Sin Cara defeats Curtis Axel. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm starting to like Sin Cara. I'm starting to be on board with Sin Cara right now. Their resurgence of Sin Cara, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with the push that he's getting. I hope it's not just ridiculously I hope it's not like a ridiculous resurgence, a ridiculous push. But you know, he's beating decent named wrestlers. Two straight weeks for Alberto Del Rio, which I'm totally okay with. Del Rio should be de-pushed anyways. And at this point, finally, he's de-pushed. He's just, and I've said it many times, he's just not over as a main event wrestler whatsoever. Just not over whatsoever as a main event wrestler. And the World Heavyweight Championship scene without him, even if the World Heavyweight Championship scene was still around, it'd be much better. But, you know, the title's unified now, so we'll see how that goes. We'll see where Del Rio will be. But even as a mid-card champion, I don't know, maybe feuding with Big E Langston for the Intercontinental Championship, maybe, I don't know. But as of now, I believe he was said to have a concussion from his match against Sin Cara a few weeks ago, so he's going to be out for a little while. However, when he comes back, I definitely don't picture him as a main event superstar. But Big E Langston and Del Rio, they had a good series of matches earlier this year during the time that Dolph Ziggler was out for his concussion when he was World Heavyweight Champion right after WrestleMania. So they can have it again. It'll be a role reversal because their last series of matches, Del Rio was he was the face and Big E Langston was the heel, but Big E Langston will be the heel this time. He'll be the face this time and Del Rio will be the heel. But we'll see. We'll see what Alberto Del Rio gets booked at. And until then, we'll just see people like Sin Cara try to make a resurgence. Honestly, you know, like I've said before, I really hope that this Sin Cara push leads to a mask versus career match. I really do. And at WrestleMania against Rey Mysterio, I mean, that's the best. That's the best way. That's the best purpose to push Sin Cara right now. Of course, he's not going to win a championship. It's not going to be any of that. So I really don't understand the purpose of pushing him the way that they are without any reason. Like I said, the biggest payoff that they can do right now leading into WrestleMania would be a mask versus career match with Rey Mysterio to send him off. Rey Mysterio, he's put in his work. He's been in the business for over 20 years, and he's done enough. He's been WWE champion. He's been world heavyweight champion. And Rey Mysterio does not need to prove himself in any capacity again, ever. And I really think that it's about time for Rey Mysterio to pack his bags and you know, hang up his boots and you know, just ride off in the sunset. Maybe be a person in the Spanish announce team. There will be his WWE presence. Other than that, in a wrestling role, I will say sayonara to Rey Mysterio leading into post-WrestleMania. But hopefully they don't do something like give him another one last push. I really hope that don't happen. I mean, Rey Mysterio's put in his work. He's done his dues. And we don't need to see any more Rey Mysterio. Not at all. As far as Curtis Axel is concerned, he falls victim. It seems like he's just about, I don't think he's as bad as Kofi Kingston, but I think that he's just about suffering the Kofi Kingston complex. You become somebody kind of when you win a mid-card championship. However, when you lose that championship, you start jobbing away. His alliance with Ryback helps. His alliance with in the tag team division helps. They actually defeated the tag team champions, which we'll get to that as far as my disdain for. And I've said that before in earlier shows. My disdain of the tag team champions continuing to lose. Not a big fan of that at all. But Ryback and Curtis Axel, Derek, our Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent, and I talked about it before. He's okay with the name, I'm not. And our chat room showed that Ryback's was not a good name as well. I'm not a big fan of the name whatsoever, Ryback's. But I tell you what, I am okay with the idea of them as a team. It puts both of them in a spot. The tag team division is a reviving division. It's starting to become very good, like I said before, with the advent of the Brotherhood. Cody Rhodes and Goldust becoming tag team champions really did a fantastic job, because when the Shield had the titles, it just wasn't really a good division. And before that, you know, it was the comedic tag team of Kane and Daniel Bryan, which, you know, it ran its course. It was funny. The build was funny. But other than that, it didn't really do much as far as the tag team division as a whole. So, you know, hopefully we'll continue to see the tag team division revive. But when we get to the Wyatt family, we'll see. When we get to the Wyatt family match, I'll express myself a little bit more as far as how I feel about the tag team champions continuing to lose. 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. 347 884-8452 is the number to call live. Once again, the current trivia question on deck is, who are known as the Mega Bucks? Last week I ended a trivia question of named the three names of Jake Roberts' snakes in the WWE. We got Damien, we got Lucifer, and the question was not answered. And I will say that the correct answer was Revelations. Revelations was the albino snake that he had during his latter run in the WWE, which marked the beginning of Austin 3:16. All right, the next match was the Wyatt family defeating Daniel Bryan, Goldust, and Cody Rhodes. I understand that they are pushing the Wyatt family, and they're continuing this feud with Daniel Bryan, which I'm still trying to figure out the purpose, the payoff in this. We're leading to Royal Rumble season, so we need to reset feuds at this point in time. I don't see this leading into WrestleMania. It would make sense for Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton and John Cena to have a triple threat match at the pay-per-view at Royal Rumble. So, I'm not a big fan of the Wyatt. I like the Wyatt family versus Daniel Bryan, but the three against one, I don't see any purpose in that, because they beat Daniel Bryan in the handicap match at TLC. They beat Daniel Bryan and the tag team champions on Raw. So what does that mean? Does Daniel Bryan beat them in a handicap match, which would not make the Wyatt family look strong? But if you don't let the Wyatt family lose, you'll have Daniel Bryan continuing to lose, and that's going to hurt his character. That's going to take him further and further away from the main event scene, which we don't need right now. So is he so much of an underdog that he wins the Royal Rumble? We'll see where that goes. But, you know, the word out on the street is that someone who's being penciled in of winning the Royal Rumble at this point in time is none other than Batista, which we saw a vignette of him returning on January the 20th that cats out the bag. And despite all the leaks, WWE went ahead and made a promo video of him coming back to January the 20th, and that should be very exciting after a near four-year hiatus. So we'll see the impact that Batista makes. And there was an interesting debate last week about Batista, about the importance of Batista, and I still will say right now that Batista was a major player in the past 10 years. Minus, you know, he's been gone since 2010, a little bit after Mania 2010. But I would actually parallel Batista and John Cena's careers, because if you think about it, Batista won the 2005 Royal Rumble, I believe. And John Cena won the Royal Rumble. John Cena won the Royal Rumble not too far from that, because I believe 2006 was Mysterio, and 2007 was The Undertaker, and I believe Cena was 2008. But even before that, he won the World Heavyweight Championship from JBL in 2006, because Batista won the 2005 Royal Rumble, and John Cena, because he went against Triple H for the World Heavyweight Championship, and that was at 20 21, I believe, he defeated JBL to become the WWE Championship. So that was 2005, because he was the runner-up. So he won the WWE Championship that year, and then Batista won the World Heavyweight Championship that year. So Batista was like the man on SmackDown. John Cena was the man on Raw, and then they would flip-flop. So they had pretty much parallel careers. They engaged in a pretty good feud towards the latter part of Batista's career. And, you know, they had a match at WrestleMania, what was that, 26, I believe, when they fought against each other for the WWE Championship. That was a good match. And then he kind of clean house on Batista, because he beat Batista at 26, and then beats Batista in a last man standing match at Extreme Rules, I believe it was. And then it was a I Quit match at, was that Over the Limit, I believe it was, before Batista left. That was May of 2010, so he kind of cleaned house on Batista. And then Batista left after that in May of 2010. So they had a pretty good feud, and I believe it was SummerSlam of 2009 where Batista beat Cena. They had a match at SummerSlam in 2009, and it was a clean victory by Batista, if I'm not mistaken. So they had a pretty for a good 6 months or so, 6-7 months, they had a good feud. Or was it Survivor Series? I think it might have, because Orton and Cena, SummerSlam of 2009 was Orton and Cena for the WWE Championship. So it might have been Survivor Series of 2009. They had a match in 2009 at a big pay-per-view, if I'm not mistaken. It might have been, I think it was Survivor Series of 2009, shortly before their match at Yeah, I don't remember exactly. I don't know that I had a match in 2009. 347-884-8452, or checked, or go in the chat room. It was one of those pay-per-views in 2009 where John Cena and Batista had a match against each other. I don't exactly remember what pay-per-view it was. I'm sure to come back to my memory. But Batista coming back should be a pretty good match, and I think that them coming back should be pretty good. They had a SummerSlam 2008. They had a match against each other. That's what it was, and it was a pretty good match between the two, John Cena versus Batista. So. And I don't know. Maybe we'll see a match between them again, but we'll see where Batista lies. I don't know if I'm okay with him winning the Royal Rumble, because he's been gone for so long. Like I said, almost 4 years. So coming back to, you know, being gone for almost 4 years and then coming back to win the Royal Rumble to go against most likely Randy Orton at the biggest WWE pay-per-view of all time at 30. That kind of leaves people like Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, kind of leave them out in the cold, which I'm not a fan of at all. And I definitely hope that they don't make that type of decision. That definitely wouldn't be a good idea for that to happen. As far as the next match concerned is, well, real quick, back to Daniel Bryan and Goldust and Cody Rhodes. Now, I did tweet during the Raw yesterday that this was Daniel Bryan, Goldust, and Cody Rhodes are the three worst pushes, the most misused pushes of 2013 goes to Daniel Bryan, Goldust, and Cody Rhodes. Now you have Daniel Bryan continuing to lose against the Wyatt family, and I mean, his push was totally misused, totally improperly booked. It was absolutely horrible. And you basically, he's the most over person in the entire company. There's absolutely no dispute about that. There's no debate about that. Daniel Bryan is the most over person in the entire company. Now, you have a great build with him and John Cena. You make him the guy. John Cena passes the torch, and then there's all types of speculation with the WWE higher-ups of the number, the buy rate, the numbers with, I believe it was Night of Champions and Battleground, they weren't that good, and so Daniel Bryan took a lot of the blow for that, which I totally disagree with, because if that's the case, you have to blame Randy Orton as well, because he was his opponent, and Randy Orton is the WWE World Heavyweight Champion at the moment, so obviously they're not blaming him. So, and you can't blame Daniel Bryan, because Daniel Bryan is way more over than Randy Orton at the time, and Randy Orton is not very over. Randy Orton is bland. Randy Orton is very monotonous. His charisma is not there. His dynamics is almost non-existent. Now, don't get me wrong, he is a good wrestler. He can put on some good matches, but his dynamic, the Randy Orton dynamic, is boring. It's not very appealing whatsoever. Even as a face, as a heel, he has the whole Viper gimmick. It's okay. But at the same time, it's nothing innovative at the time. Right now, it's just not innovative. It's the same Randy Orton that we continue to have. It's not appealing. It's not fun. It's not intriguing. It's just the same Randy Orton. So, I'm just not a big fan of it. Not a big fan whatsoever. And I hope that the WWE understands that Randy Orton needs to drop that title as soon as possible. Now, does he keep it until WrestleMania? Most likely, because WrestleMania 30, you want a heel being the champion just so you can have that main event feel-good moment with a babyface winning the title and chasing the title on the road to WrestleMania. Yeah, I understand that. But Randy Orton having the title until WrestleMania, I really have to prepare myself for that as much as possible, because I really hope that, whether I hope that it's going to happen or not, there's a really good chance that it is going to happen. But it's very unfortunate that we're going to see Randy Orton as champion going into WrestleMania, because I just don't see it. Honestly, I would rather see a babyface versus babyface match going into WrestleMania, because to me, even with babyface versus babyface match, the build for that can still be very good. If you just think about it, the last two main events of WrestleMania was John Cena versus The Rock. Now, both matches were babyface versus babyface matches. You have The Undertaker before CM Punk, the 4 years before that, Shawn Michaels and Triple H were both babyfaces. So, babyface versus babyface at a big stage pay-per-view, it works. It's worked many times and will continue to work. To me, one of the best pay-per-views, to me, the best WrestleMania of all time is WrestleMania 17, main evented by Stone Cold Steve Austin against The Rock. The build was phenomenal. The pay-per-view was great, and they both came in as face versus face. Of course, we saw Steve Austin make the turn and go with Vince McMahon and become heel. But still, you still leave that option open with a face versus face match leading into a big pay-per-view. Maybe one of them will turn heel. It will add much more, you know, intrigue, much more of a cliffhanger for the next Raw. You have those options open. So either a face versus face or a heel having the championship for a face to chase it is preferable for a big stage like that. But Randy Orton having the title, I'm just not a big fan. And moreover, Batista being a heel, his spotlight gimmick was spot on. The bazooka coming out, it was, you know, it's exciting, high octane. Yeah, I agree. But it got redundant after a while, and it became just the same old entrance, same old Batista that people kind of got tired of. He wasn't as over. And so the turn was necessary when he turned on Rey Mysterio, and it really revived Batista's character very, very much. He was selfish, all eyes on me, very egotistical, just very pompous, and it worked. It worked very well. And, you know, of course he'll have the return pop. I understand that. He'll have the return pop. But, hey, I actually wouldn't be opposed to the WWE deciding to turn him heel before WrestleMania and maybe even defeating Randy Orton at Elimination Chamber, because, you know, from Elimination Chamber to WrestleMania, there's still a good 6 weeks or so for a build. So you can easily, you know, have Daniel Bryan win the Royal Rumble, Batista become champion and defeat Randy Orton, turn heel, and Daniel Bryan versus Batista at 30. I think that's could work. Or CM Punk win the Royal Rumble, CM Punk versus Batista, that'll work too. But I think Daniel Bryan should have his moment. He should have a legit WWE title reign instead of a tainted one by winning the title and then losing it against Randy Orton, and then, you know, having winning the title again and being forced to be held under abeyance and just really tainted title reigns. Daniel Bryan needs to shine. He's over. The Yes Chants still work. Personally, I'm not the big fan. I'm not as a big of a fan of them as I used to be. However, they still work. The Yes Chants, he's so over. The WWE needs to capitalize on that as much as possible instead of having him continuing to lose against the Wyatt family, which leads to nothing, because what does that mean? Bray Wyatt and the Wyatt family, they won the feud against Kane. They won the feud against Kofi Kingston. They won the feud against The Miz. However, they still aren't as – I still don't think that they're living up to the hype. I still don't. I still don't think they are as – over as the WWE wanted them to be, even with their resurgence and trying to have them, you know, take out Daniel Bryan, even now. And there's been some speculation that Luke Harper and Eric Rowan are on deck to become tag team champions. You don't do that. You don't have them win the titles by continuing to have the Rhodes brothers lose against random tag teams. How in the world are you going to keep the momentum of the tag team title scene if you have the Rhodes brothers lose against Ryback, Soul, and the Real Americans, and Harper and Rowan on episodes of SmackDown? You just don't do that. And I've said it before. I'm not a fan. I understand that it has to happen sometimes to make someone a worthy contender, but I'm certainly not a fan whatsoever of the tag team champions continuing to lose against random tag teams just for them to become number one contenders. Not a good idea whatsoever. Very poor booking, because number one, it loses the steam of the tag team champions because they're tag team champions because, you know, simply due to them being the best team in the division. But if you have them continuing to lose, the team that they lose against becomes, you know, de facto number one contenders, which ultimately means that the next pay-per-view they'll most likely lose. So I'll add Rey Mysterio and Big Show to the list of people who's defeated the Rhodes brothers in the past few weeks. And we'll see where that led to. Rey Mysterio and Big Show, they lost. They lost against the Rhodes brothers in the Fatal 4-Way match, and then they beat them clean on Raw. Where does that lead to? They're not going to have a match, a tag team title match at the Royal Rumble. I highly doubt it. I highly doubt that they'll have a tag team title match at the Royal Rumble. You just put Mysterio and Big Show together as a tag team, and you beat the tag team champions. They don't even work their way up to it. Just very poor booking. And they need to stop having just multiple teams every week defeat the tag team champions. How does that look in the tag team division if you've had in the past few weeks the Real Americans, Rey Mysterio and Big Show, the Wyatt, Luke Harper and Eric Rowan, and, you know, Ryback defeat the tag team champions? It's horrible. And we'll see where this leads as far as the Wyatt family is concerned, but I don't see much of a payoff here for Daniel Bryan. I was hoping that it would help Daniel Bryan and gain steam and gain momentum for Daniel Bryan like it has for CM Punk, because CM Punk won the handicap match, and I called that. I knew that Daniel Bryan wasn't going to win, but I was hoping at least he would get some type of retribution. But no, I mean, he continues to get attacked by the Wyatt family. Bray Wyatt continues to recruit him, and this is all leading into the Royal Rumble, which I certainly hope that Daniel Bryan doesn't get utilized at the Royal Rumble simply for a match against Bray Wyatt or another handicap match against the Wyatt family. I really, really hope that does not happen. The only way that I can see it being worth my time is for somehow the Wyatt family aligns themselves, not necessarily being in the faction of the Authority, but have some type of temporary alliance with the Authority, and Daniel Bryan wanting to be the World Heavyweight Champion, and either he has to defeat the Wyatt family in the gauntlet match at the Royal Rumble or at the SmackDown or Raw before the Royal Rumble to either become a entrant in the Royal Rumble or become a third person in the John Cena and Randy Orton tag match. That's the only way that I believe that this would work as far as him and the Wyatt family, if he has to beat them in order to become champion or winner of the Royal Rumble. That would work. Other than that, I don't see any payoff. Fandango defeats Dolph Ziggler in a Christmas present on a pole match to become number one contender for the Intercontinental Championship. I think this was pretty obvious. It was pretty obvious that Fandango was going to win. Of course, you weren't going to have a face versus face mid card match with Dolph Ziggler and Biggie Langston. And rightfully so, they want to build up Biggie Langston. I'm okay with the decision. Unfortunately, it's at the expense of Dolph Ziggler. So that's no good, because Dolph Ziggler continues to fall victim to jobbing and not being successful. He fell victim to Damian Sandow, only for Sandow to lose against Biggie Langston. He fell victim to Fandango, and I certainly don't believe that Fandango will become Intercontinental Champion against Biggie Langston. That would just suck all the momentum out of Biggie Langston's push, which the WWE, I think, is smart enough not to do that at this moment. And so I understand the purpose of doing that, and it makes, you know, and it makes Biggie Langston, it makes his push even better, because people have to earn their stripes to become number one contender, and I'm okay with that. I've always been a fan of number one contenders matches for any title, because it makes the champion or champions more important, because people have to earn their way to become even a number one contender for the championship. I think that way is much better than defeating the champion and automatically becoming number one contender. Just doesn't make sense for that to happen. And so for Fandango to defeat Dolph Ziggler, I'm okay with it. I can understand the point. Although I think a triple threat match would have been better, but you really couldn't have had two winners in a match like this unless somehow both of them would have took the present down when they were just kind of going back and forth on the ropes. If both of them would have took it down, you could have done it that way, which I wouldn't have been opposed to either. But I think it's a good way to build the Intercontinental title scene, which still I have no idea why Dean Ambrose is the UFC champion. Doesn't make sense at all to me. The Mega Bucks were Ted DiBiase and Andre the Giant. So great job as far as the answer goes. Next trivia question. This person was known as Lightning Kid in GWF. This person was known as Lightning Kid in the Global Wrestling Federation. Next we have the Usos defeating the Primetime Players. Feel good tag team match. Both of them being baby faces. I wonder if the Houston mistake was intentional or unintentional from Darren Young. It was pretty funny. And he got some boos for it, of course. And then, you know, he gets the "This is Austin" chant. That was pretty funny. It's cool how mistakes can turn out to innovative chants. This is awesome, this is Austin, which was very clever of the Austin crowd. The Houston sucks chant, wasn't a big fan of, simply because, and I tweeted this during Raw, it's funny how we'll hear chants like that, but when, say, someone like Booker T, who's from Houston, Texas, if Booker T, if he was in a match or if he was announced, you know, they'll say he's Texas's own, or Undertaker's from Houston, Texas. You know, they'll say something like, you know, "Ladies and gentlemen, Texas's own Booker T," or "Texas's own The Undertaker." They'll have, like, massive pops, even being from Houston and Austin. So it's interesting how they would do that, how they say Houston sucks, but if they were announced differently as Texas' own, being from Houston, they'll get a big Austin pop. So very, very interesting. I tweeted about that during Raw. But it was all in good fun, and I think that the ending, the Usos is still, you know, the most polished, other than the Rhodes Brothers, the most polished tag team in the entire division. They need to win the tag team titles very soon because obviously the WWE is done with the Rhodes Brothers hype. I think that it was a bad idea for them to pull the plug on it so early and have them lose so many matches. They still have some momentum behind them. They were like the hottest commodities in the WWE the past couple of months. But to continue to, it just seems like they intentionally killed their momentum. I don't like it whatsoever. It's not a good idea. How in the world are you going to continue someone's momentum by having them constantly lose? Like I said, Daniel Bryan, Goldust, and Cody Rhodes, the three most misused pushes of the entire year, period. But the Usos and Primetime Players, it was a good match, as I knew there was going to be. And then celebrating at the end, I was totally okay with that. Then you had the good Santa, Mark Henry, defeating the bad Santa, Damian Sandow. Very interesting that the Raw Christmas was built, you know, around this for the most part. It was all in good fun, and I was okay with it. Mark Henry, you know, Christmas is continued because Mark Henry, the good Santa, defeats Damian Sandow, the bad Santa. It was very novelty-esque, and it fit. It was, you know, it was a good idea for the Christmas show for Raw, and good Santa being Mark Henry was a funny decision. And Damian Sandow, he fit the bad Santa. He fit that role perfectly with his gimmick. So it was good. Los Matadores defeats the Real Americans. Now, here's another thing. It seems like the Los Matadores really has the Real Americans number because the Real Americans just can't manage to defeat that team when it really comes down to it, but they can defeat the tag team champions clean. So don't really understand why, how that works, but, you know, I guess at the end of the day, you know, the tag team division is how it is. It's finally revised. It's finally important again. So the good thing that you can get out of this is that at least the tag team division means something. The Los Matadores, I'm not really sold on them anymore. I knew that they're almost flash in the pan. I really don't see much with them. I definitely don't see a tag team championship run with them anytime soon. I'm not saying that it won't happen, but, I mean, you've got some teams way ahead of them. Of course, you've got Rowan and Harper. You've even got the Shield. You've got the Real Americans who they defeated. They're a more quality tag team than the Los Matadores. You know, I suppose you can throw in Ryback, so Rey Mysterio and Big Show since they defeated the Rhodes Brothers. So I would say there's probably two teams that are below them. Well, if you include R-Truth and Xavier Woods and Santino and Great Khali, those two teams are below them, and you add 3MB, whatever version of 3MB, those are probably the only teams that are below them. Maybe the Primetime Players as well, or maybe they're on the same level as Los Matadores as far as title contention, but there's more teams ahead of them than below them, so I don't see Los Matadores winning or becoming worthy contenders anytime soon. Of course, Kofi Kingston gets his weekly job against Ryback this week. I have no idea what that leads to. Ryback will just continue to be a non-factor at the time. Every time, I tell you what, like I said before, every time they continue to make him a singles person, I mean, he needs to be with Curtis Axel right now. Because if they make him a singles wrestler, it has no point, absolutely no point. The only thing that I can see working with this is if Ryback engages in a feud with with Biggie Langston. And I think Mark Henry's on deck for that. And I already threw out Del Rio. So Ryback and Biggie Langston would be a good feud. But I don't see the WWE doing that. As far as building up Ryback, there's no point of building him up because we've seen many, many times the bigger you build Ryback up, the harder he falls when the build up means absolutely nothing. You build him up multiple times and the guy has yet to win a single championship in the WWE. That pretty much says it all right there. Then at the end we saw John Cena, CM Punk, and Biggie Langston defeat The Shield by disqualification. I believe that it was the fact that it wasn't a clean win was sufficient. It made sense leading into the upcoming Raws and into the pay-per-view. Again, where does this go? Does this lead to a singles match with Biggie Langston and Roman Reigns for the Intercontinental Championship? I'm okay with the feud, but at this point you cannot you can't diminish the Biggie Langston push by any means. You cannot do it whatsoever. And Biggie Langston losing the Intercontinental Championship would be a travesty because you finally got someone who you can work with a slow build. You can't mess it up. You just can't mess it up whatsoever. Biggie Langston is one of only a very select few that they are successfully giving a slow build to. And they can't mess it up by just pulling the plug on him. And they've got their shot, they've got their opportunity, and having him lose the championship anytime soon would just not be a good idea whatsoever. So hopefully we get to see Biggie Langston have a good slow build and continue his way to become World Heavyweight Champion sooner than later. Correct answer, of course. Great job. The Lightning Kid in the GWF was Sean Waltman. So great job with that. Going into SmackDown real quick. Again, like I said before, I usually do the SmackDown and Impact Wrestling reviews on WrestlingEat.com, but unfortunately I was in the hospital last weekend with just unexpected major surgery. But like I said, of course, you can probably hear it in my voice right now. Of course, it Pancakes and Power Slams. We are in the studio. We keep it professional, but every now and then I have to let you know a little bit about my personal life and my real world here. And unfortunately, we did. Derek is off today for the holidays, but I wanted to keep the show rolling, and the show must go on. And wanted to let everyone know. But I had back surgery earlier this year, and I took some time off for that, and definitely was planning on, and I've been resting, and I will continue to rest. But I told myself that I have the will and the drive to Pancakes and Power Slams on this week, and it's worth it. 347-884-8452 is the number to put in your back pocket. Of course, this show and next week's show it's going to be abbreviated for the holidays, but we're going to continue to have the fun and excitement of Pancakes and Power Slams for your listening ears every week through rain, snow, sleet, whatever the case may be. Pancakes and Power Slams, episode 91. We are here. We are live. And I'm so thankful that I have the opportunity to share my passion for wrestling with you all. So follow me at Crave Wrestling and on Twitter, Facebook. Go to the Crave Wrestling Facebook page. Special shout-out to RearWrestling.net for supporting the cause of Pancakes and Power Slams. Check them out at RearWrestling.net. They have a really good Facebook support base, and they have their website's continuing to become better and better. And check out their podcast on Mondays and Wednesdays. So we're just continue to have some fun with Pancakes and Power Slams, and we're going to be closing up the show here in just a moment. But before then, like I said, Impact Wrestling and SmackDown reviews usually on wrestling.com every week. But, of course, like last week, like I said, was in the hospital. So, unfortunately, but I did get to watch the shows. Big E Langston defeats Jack Swagger. Brie Bella defeats Tamina Snuka. Sin Cara defeats Drew McIntyre. Tensai defeats Brodus Clay. I was hoping that when I saw that match, I was hoping, I actually saw it in my hospital bed, but I was hoping that they would have a little bit better build with Tensai and Brodus Clay. Now, Brodus Clay made the turn as a heel, which I'm okay with, but I was hoping that they'll make a little bit better build with that, but it seems like the emphasis is more on Brodus Clay and Xavier Woods, which kind of makes it a bit convoluted because Tensai was his partner as well. So Tensai had a little roll-up, you know, schoolboy type of roll-up because of distraction. So, you know, just to have it on SmackDown, I was a big fan of that. And again, like I said, Harper and Rowan defeating the Rhodes brothers cleanly in a non-title match, not a fan of that at all. Somehow The Miz was a babyface again, just like he was on Main Event. And just don't understand what they're doing with The Miz. But he lost against Damian Sandow. So The Miz is probably the biggest waste of 2013. Kofi Kingston jobs again. That's nothing new. This time against Fandango. And then CM Punk and John Cena defeated the Shield by disqualification. As far as final resolution is concerned with Impact Wrestling, we'll go into this real quick. We had the Magnus in-ring promo. Jeff Hardy appears and explains the encounter with Dixie Carter. Tells Magnus not to worry about himself. Bobby Roode defeats Kurt Angle. And a 2 out of 3 falls match. I'm still wondering why they're having Angle job so much. Again, I think when I think of wrestling, when I think of feuds, I think of payoffs. What in the world is the payoff of Kurt Angle continuing to lose in this way? He forfeits his Hall of Fame, which really shows how important TNA is. And then after forfeiting his Hall of Fame induction, he goes on this losing streak against Bobby Roode. Does it lead to a World Heavyweight Championship? Possibly. Kurt Angle and Magnus would be, I'll be okay with that. I certainly don't want to see Jeff Hardy and Magnus, which we'll probably see at least for the next few weeks. Eric Young calls out Joseph Park. He gives him gifts. He gives him a chair, thumbtacks, barbed wire. And then finally Janice, which kind of makes Eric Young prove more of his point in Joseph Park being Abyss. And he books a match next week against Bad Influence. Well, this week now. The Feast are fired. Cases are revealed. World Heavyweight Championship goes to Gunner. X Division Championship goes to Zema Ion. Tag Team Championship goes to EC3. Which I wonder if Sting will be his partner. I know that'll be pretty interesting. And then, of course, the fire case goes to Chavo Guerrero. That comes by absolutely no surprise. Madison Rayne and ODB defeats Gail Kim and Lady Tapa. And then Magnus makes his dreaded heel turn by defeating Jeff Hardy to become the new TNA World Heavyweight Champion. Now, I'm very happy that the champion was Magnus. I'm totally fine with that. However, I'm not a fan of him I'm not a fan of Magnus becoming heel. I'm just not. I don't think it's a good idea, and I really hope that they. It just seems like a cheap way out to me, honestly. It really seems like a cheap way out. I don't see any type of benefit in Magnus being a heel, because at the end of the day, you're looking at Magnus trying to kind of earn his way back to becoming a relevant heel again. And so now you kind of give him the cheap way out and have him become a heel world champion, which kind of it's just not a good idea. I'm not a fan of it. Building more momentum to become a face, because the thing is, he was already getting slight boos. And so by him being against the grain, by him being against Dixie Carter for a few more weeks as a babyface champion, of him getting more and more and more pops as a babyface, that would make him a better heel. But Magnus was already trying to earn his stripes as a face. He was getting some pops, and he's been getting a little bit more boos lately. But you have to earn. It would be better if he would earn his way up to becoming a babyface, to become a big, huge babyface. And then it would have made the heel turn much better. Now he turns heel, and it's to the point of, people don't really care. So hopefully we'll see better. Hopefully we'll see better booking. We'll see a build with Magnus. I'm interested to see how they will book him as a heel. I'm hoping not some you all bought it type of heel run, because to be honest, no, Magnus, we didn't buy it. A lot of people didn't really care, and I think that the creative staff should have spent more time in building him as a babyface. They tried to do it the day of Final Resolution by saying Jeff Hardy's the culprit and aligning himself with Dixie Carter. Okay, they tried. However, I don't think it was very believable, because at the end of the day, like I imagined, Magnus was the one who was going to make the heel turn. So it was quite predictable. And then ROH was more of a it was totally dedicated to Adam Cole. And I think it was a good episode. It made Adam Cole important. It made him it kind of made us understand why he is the champion, why he is the Ring of Honor champion, why they decided to build him the way they did. And I think the past 4 years, for someone to become ROH world champ after 4 years, I think it was a good build, you know, for them to make him the chosen person after 4 years from the company. I understand, you know, his alliance with Kyle O'Reilly and then Eddie Edwards and then, you know, his feud with Matt Hardy, and they did a good job as far as chronology of his career in ROH, and I think it was a good way to prove himself as a main eventer. I'm just not sold on Adam Cole as a world champion yet. There's something missing with Adam Cole to me. I don't know, maybe because his looks generic. I think that may be it. He has a generic look. And, I mean, he's very good in the ring. His charisma's okay. I think for some reason his charisma in PWG is a little bit better than ROH, but there's something missing about Adam Cole to me. It just seems generic. And hopefully his run as a heel, we'll see a little bit more something. Maybe his gear change, maybe something. Something needs to happen because he looks very generic. All right, let's close the show with the Flavor of the Week. Special edition next week. Be sure to stay tuned to the Twitter page, Pancakes and Power, the Crave Wrestling Twitter page, at Crave Wrestling, for next week's New Year's show. It'll be at a special time next Tuesday, so be sure to stay tuned as far as the time. And, again, we're going to recap the Flavor of the Weeks throughout the year, our favorite Flavor of the Week segments or favorite topics, and we'll revisit them. Very, very fun New Year's episode. So be sure to stay tuned next Tuesday as far as the time, the adjusted time for next week and what we're going to do. Maybe we'll leak out some topics. We'll see. Just stay tuned to the Crave Wrestling Twitter page and also the Facebook page. All right, we're going to do Royal Rumble 1999 to 2002 this week. Start off with 1999. We had, as far as the matches are concerned, we had the Big Boss Man defeating Road Dogg. Again, this is Royal Rumble 1999. And at that point in time, Shawn Michaels was the commissioner of the WWE, interestingly enough. He was out of action due to his back. And Ken Shamrock defeats Billy Gunn for the Intercontinental Championship. He retains the Intercontinental Championship. X-Pac defeats Gangrel for the to retain the European Championship. Sable defeats Luna Vachon in a strap match to retain the Women's Championship. The Rock defeats Mankind in an I Quit match for the WWE Championship. He wins the championship. I remember that match very, very clear, very vividly. It's when The Rock actually had the microphone doctored to make Mick Foley say I quit, which it really didn't happen. Very interesting. It was a very brutal match, too. And then, for some reason, Vince McMahon was the choice of winning the Royal Rumble by defeating Stone Cold Steve Austin, eliminating him last. And that was just a horrible idea, because at the end of the day, it was for a title match for WrestleMania 15 and for the WWE Championship, and Austin won anyways. So I really didn't see the point of that, and he actually won. So it wasn't a good idea. Steve Austin, Vince McMahon wins the Royal Rumble just for Austin to go to Mania and win the title. So that really didn't make much difference. Definitely should have been a different person to win that championship, to win the Royal Rumble. Even if it wasn't Steve Austin, I would have been okay with someone else winning the Royal Rumble, leading into maybe even a triple threat match. Royal Rumble 2000, we saw we saw Taz defeat Kurt Angle, Taz's WWE debut. Very, very good debut. It was pretty much a squash. It was only a few minutes long. Good. It was, you know, a good build to debut Taz. Hardy Boys defeated the Dudleys in an elimination tables match. Mae Young defeated Ivory, Jackie, Luna Vachon, Barbara Bush, Terry, and the Cat, Luna Vachon, in a Miss Rumble 2000 bikini contest. Very interesting there. And during the time we had that, the Intercontinental title undisputed, you know, who was the undisputed champion? It was three people that were feuding for it. Jericho, China, and Hardcore Holly. Very interestingly, very interesting tidbit about that, how all three of them were feuding for the Intercontinental Championship. Jericho won the championship. China won the championship. But WWE decided not to place the title on Hardcore Holly, which I think they should, because it was a very interesting feud at the time. I don't think that China should have been nowhere near involved. That was a horrible idea. But Jericho and Holly was a good feud. New Age Outlaws defeating the Acolytes for the Tag Team Championships. They retain it. That was relatively a squash as well. And then Triple H defeating Cactus Jack in the street fight to retain the WWE Championship. And then you had The Rock defeating The Big Show to retain the to become the winner of the Royal Rumble, which still, I don't know, is pretty interesting because it doesn't seem like it was meant for The Rock to be eliminated the way that he was. It seemed like it was pretty much a botch, but The Rock, both of The Rock's feet were out, and they just kind of plugged it as Show's feet were out before The Rock's, but I have my doubts. Again, very interestingly enough, leads to a main event at WrestleMania 2000 that both The Big Show and The Rock was in. It was a fatal four-way match with them two, including Mick Foley and Triple H, which many people say was the worst WrestleMania main event of all time. But I don't think that WrestleMania 2000 was, I don't think the main event was as bad as people put it to be. I was okay with it. Four-way main event for the world title. I think it can have its due purpose, and I was okay with the four that was chosen, especially at the time because they were four of the top wrestlers in the WWE. Then we got Royal Rumble 2001. The results for that was the Dudleys defeating Edge and Christian for the Tag Team Championships, becoming new champions. That was a pretty good match. Chris Jericho defeating Chris Benoit in a ladder match for the Intercontinental Championship. I remember that match, too. It was very, very good. Very good match. They had a pretty good feud anyways. Ivory defeating China to retain the Women's Championship. Kurt Angle defeating Triple H for the WWE Championship. And then you had Stone Cold Steve Austin winning the 2001 Royal Rumble by defeating Kane, which, again, I think that Steve Austin should have not won this one. It's 99, 2000, and 2001 was a bit weird for me as far as the Royal Rumble winners. 99 shouldn't have been McMahon. 2000 was The Rock, but it was kind of weird how he won, but The Rock and Big Show became a part of the Royal Rumble, part of the WrestleMania main event. And then you had Austin defeating Kane to become, of course, WrestleMania 17 was the best. To me, again, I think it was the best pay-per-view in WrestleMania history. But having Austin win it for three straight years, I mean, the third time, and then, you know, because 2001 is when Kane, like, I think he eliminated, like, 11 people somewhere around there. And I don't know. I think they could have worked. Somehow they could have worked the way to having Austin Rock anyways, but maybe having Kane lose his opportunity in a match against Austin before WrestleMania, something like that. But I think Kane at least should have had, as many people he's eliminated throughout the years, he at least should have had a Royal Rumble win underneath underneath his belt in his resume. And that in 2001 was the closest that they could have got, but unfortunately, again, as normal, Kane fell short, unfortunately. And then lastly, this week we'll do 2002. We had Spike Dudley and Taz defeating the Dudleys, Bubba Ray and D-Von, by submission to retain the tag team championships. That was a pretty short match, too. And then we had William Regal defeating Edge to become the Intercontinental Champion. Trish Stratus defeating Jazz to retain the Women's Championship. Street Fight, Ric Flair defeating Vince McMahon. Very interesting match there. And then we had Chris Jericho defeating The Rock for the Undisputed, to retain the Undisputed Championship. And then Triple H defeating, last eliminating Kurt Angle by, it was his big return, you know, Raw prior to the previous Raw to the Royal Rumble. He was, you know, he tore his quad, had the big return, and of course it made sense for Triple H to become the Royal Rumble winner. And of course he defeated Chris Jericho at WrestleMania 18 to become the Undisputed Champion. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to Pancakes and Power Slams. And I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas. It is actually Christmas morning now, turning over to the Christmas morning, the midnight hour. And I want to thank everyone so much for continuing to support Pancakes and Power Slams. Again, I accept, you know, I appreciate everyone's well wishes and all the people who've known, who knew about my surgery, that I informed. I'm so thankful that of the support that I've been receiving in the past over the weekend. I'm just thankful, just very, very thankful. Again, my personal Twitter handle is @ChrisProlific. So if you want to send your well wishes in my road to recovery from my surgery, I thank you so much. And, of course, you know, you'll hear me sound better in the coming weeks. But, again, I want to make sure that the listeners get what they long for, and that's for Tuesday nights at 11 p.m. to be a time to have a lot of fun and interactive trivia and some fun recap and analysis of the past week's professional wrestling show. So, hey, you know, 90 episodes ago, or now about to be 91 episodes ago, I promised all of you that I would continue to do the best that I can and continue to keep that drive into making Pancakes and Power Slams the best show on Tuesday nights and one of the best shows of all of Blog Talk Radio and all of professional wrestling podcasts. So the numbers show that I have, that I've I'm doing a good job and continuing that journey, and it only gets up from here. We're reaching 100 episodes, and it'll be 2 years in April, and I will continue to thank each and every one of you for supporting the cause and just having fun with us here at Pancakes and Power Slams, reading all of my Bleacher Report articles, over 4 million reads. Thank you so much for that. Reading my Retro Wednesday and my Impact and SmackDown reviews and my news articles at wrestling.com. Thank you so much. I just really, really so humbled and so thankful for all of you for continuing to support something that I had in mind in 2012 and just continuing to make it bigger and bigger. And, you know, hey, if you want to support financially, PayPal, CraveWrestling@gmail.com, and just spread the word about Pancakes and Power Slams. Again, Twitter, @CraveWrestling, book, fan page, Crave Wrestling. Check me out, Chris Featherstone on Bleacher Report, ChrisFeatherstoneOnWrestling.com. Until next week, I want you to have a fantastic Christmas day, and just spend it with your family, spend it relaxing, spend it having a lot of fun, because there's only one Christmas throughout the year, and make this a memorable Christmas. And I want to wish you and yours the best Christmas and the most enjoyable and memorable Christmas that you can possibly have today. And until next week, enjoy your week of wrestling, Merry Christmas, and God bless. Goodbye.